This is T. Cooper.
And Allison Glock Cooper, writers of episode 809, The Serenoid.
You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Thankfully, I only dip my wicks in wax. Welcome, everyone, to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson, and honestly, I think we've all dipped our figurative wicks in the wrong pool now and again. Am I right? I know I'm not alone. All right, thanks for joining us yet again for number 35 on The Blacklist. The Serenoid, written by Allison Glock Cooper and T. Cooper, and directed by Andrew McCarthy, who's becoming pretty much my favorite director on the show, I think. Not to play favorites, but I enjoy when he's doing an episode. Show notes and our intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
Since it's only New York directors, I think he's the only director.
Yeah, I mean, they have to keep it light, right? Because of COVID times.
They sure do. They sure do. But it's coming to an end soon, people. Coming to an end soon, hopefully. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We basically have our profiling question of the week at the top of the show where we answer some feedback from the week before's episode. Then we get into our case profile for the Serenoid, and that is not similar to Cylon or any way kind of robot-based, but we'll get into that later. We're going to skip Red's rhetoric this week because there really wasn't much story. It was more really focused on a really long interaction, which we'll get into, but we will hit some special agent intel at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. Some reflections on North by Northwest in the special agent intel, so it'll be fun to see where that all leads. But first, will we see Anne again, Aaron? What do we think?
14% say no, 86% say yes. And
where did you land?
Yeah, probably. I think mostly because I thought I heard something. So one listener definitely tried to spoil it for me.
Now you spoiled it for everybody.
Well, you can edit that out. You can bleep it. You can do whatever you want with it. But that's what I heard. That's why I asked, never tell me anything that doesn't happen beyond the current episode, because it really irritates me personally. I don't want to know. I'm not one of those people that just say it and then actually don't mean it. I really don't want to know. I don't go read those articles. I just don't want to know.
See, there's a difference between, like, we could assume Rakitin is going to be on a future episode because he's still alive, and someone actually telling you there's a future episode called Rakitin. I don't know if there is or not, but see, that's the difference. Speculation versus actual things that TV Guide throws out there and ruins the show for everybody.
Yeah, if you know and you say it, that's a spoiler. That's the difference. Like, people always want, that's not really a spoiler. Hey, guess what? It is. If I didn't know it, it's a spoiler.
My favorite is when they post 100%. All the pictures for the future episodes, and I'm like, those pictures don't tell you crap. The majority of the pictures that we've seen for the last couple of seasons have been the same pictures for the most part. Picture in the war room, picture at some restaurant, picture at Red's restaurant.
Think of all the commercials for the last several episodes where they show Liz's face. I'm like, you haven't seen it yet, have you? So I don't trust much of what comes out.
Left side of Liz, the right side of Liz, the back side of Liz.
Lord. All right, well, we'll come back to that. But some of the listener thoughts, Douglas Bumgardner thought she's either the woman from the woman's shelter or she's a plant, which, you know, possible. I got to be perfectly honest. I'll be disappointed if she's anything but a genuine person because I feel like that's been done to death. The fake love interest is actually someone nefarious, double agent, bad. I just feel like that's been done to death, and I would not want to see that done.
I am with
personal,
you.
Personal choice.
I would hope that she's just a nice, sweet lady.
I would love to see that. I think that would be a fun, actually, a much more interesting arc for me than it would be to have someone nefarious. I think it would be more interesting to see Red try to grapple with the prospects of a love life after everything he's done. I think that sounds fascinating. Or another double agent does not.
Yeah, or she could be the woman from the shelter from Rosfiet, and I would be happy with that, too.
I would not. That would just annoy me.
Kimberly Torma said, I do not care. At least she got Reddington upright on 2 feet and out of the kitchen.
I like it. I like it. Berlina Black, if foreseeing the last scene of the episode, Reddington ringing the doorbell and her opening the door. That'd be all right. That'd be nice.
Sweet. That'd be nice. D.D. Elliott said, she'll be back. I'm just not sure how, but I hope it's with Red showing up at her door to apologize for standing her up at the movie and tries to make it up to her. I almost read that with make it out with her, but...
Either way, see, I'm a firm believer that anybody that stands you up for a Hitchcock movie is not worthy of being entered back into your house. So as soon as he opened the door, if I was her, I would just slam it shut. Mm. And Monica Stolfa, I fear if she does come back, then she will be in grave danger. I hope I'm wrong. See, that's more interesting to me than another plant or rogue agent or something. Or Liz set her after him or something. I just don't like that. We've done it. Let's do something different.
Let's just hope it's grave danger and just not in grave. That would be kind of sad.
And no, we haven't necessarily done it with Fred. I just mean other characters have had that. Hello, Liz Keen. I mean, Tom Keen. I can't do another Tom Keen. I just can't.
Nope.
Can't.
Well, what do you want to hear from the listeners for next week?
I want to know what you think Red's 30-year project specifically was. See if we can get anything interesting. What have you pieced together from all this of 8 years? What do you see as actually his 30-year project?
Finding the last piece to the puzzle.
That's the lamest answer. So come up with anything but that, and you have a chance of being right on the next week's show.
What is the secret ingredient in the secret sauce of the Big Mac?
It's literally Thousand Island dressing.
It totally is.
I solved it. The case is over. Boom. We're done. Go home.
All right. Well, before we get another swamp creature neutered, let's get into this week's case profile.
Has the mystery been solved if that's real beef in those hamburgers at McDonald's? That's the one thing I don't know. I mean, I really feel like it was soy, and then it was meat, and then there was like a mixture, and then, I don't know, Taco Bell beef came into this somewhere. Like, where are we at with the...
The quarter pounder is now officially fresh meat. The other stuff I still don't know about.
It's not all just lips, huh?
I work there, so I have no idea. I just put the pig thing on the grill.
Did you work there many years ago or what?
Like when I was in high school, yeah, for like 5 years.
That was a minute ago. I'm talking since then. Like at some point, I'm sure nobody cares about this. We'll have this continue discussion.
It's not actually Troy and Aaron this week. It's actually completely different people controlling our bodies.
Oh, boy. Yeah. How about that? Plot dynamic. All right. Red and Dembe open an apartment with Liz. It seems. And then we do the 12 hours earlier. So now, you know that's a pet peeve of mine.
Well, and the worst part about this is that...
You know that.
If you watched the trailer for this week's episode and you saw that clip in the trailer, then the minute the episode starts with that clip, you're like, oh, crap, 12 weeks. Like, I just went like, okay, is it going to be hours or days? That was the first thing I said. I was like, okay, 48 hours, 36 hours, 2 days. Yep. Like, what's the flashback time frame here?
Yeah. It's always my pet peeve. Hey, there's a lot of shows I love to do it. Hawaii Five-O did it all the time. And that was always like a fun kind of throwaway show for me. But every time I did it, my eyes literally just to the back of my head. I'm just like, here we go. Here we go. How many hours earlier? Anyway, serenoids are people who do not speak thoughts originating in their own central nervous system. Rather, the words they speak originate in the mind of another person who transmits these words to the serenoid by radio transmission. In essence, fake Liz, or Walmart Liz, whatever we're calling her, she's basically, you know, got this a nice little digital device in her eyeball, and she has, you know, a little earpiece device, and she's speaking for Liz at all points. She's doing what Liz tells her. She is Liz's little avatar, running around, kicking ass and taking names in Liz Keen's name. What do you think about this concept? And you have some details you want to elaborate to.
Well, yeah, just the original concept of the serenoid came from the 1970s with a psychologist by the name of Stanley Milgram, who actually developed the idea as a means of operationalizing the mind-body fusion fantasy explored from the 1897 play Cyrano de Bergerac that you hear Red talk about in the episode. In the story, Cyrano, a romantic but unattractive poet, supplies Christian, a handsome but inarticulate cadet, with amorous prose so that they may jointly woo Roxanne, each being incapable, given their own respective limitations, on doing so by themselves. The play has actually been translated and performed many times and is responsible for introducing the word panache into the English language.
Mm.
Cyrano, the character, is in fact famed for his panache, and he himself makes reference to my panache in the play, which I just thought was interesting because Reddington obviously carries himself with much panache in his daily walkings and doings.
All I heard from that was Roxanne, which is a nice little spin on this whole story. And it's a wonderful movie starring Steve Martin. So you should definitely find that one. That's far more interesting than the play. I firmly believe that.
For those that might have seen Roxanne, what's the gist of that movie?
Steve Martin has a fantastic nose, and he's trying to woo the lady through a stud. And then he comes to find out he kind of loves the lady. Because he doesn't think she would ever appreciate him. So he helps the guy try to get her. It, you know, it's a great movie. Go watch it. Very romantic, sweet movie.
I just watched Father of the Bride.
Steve Martin's one of our greatest comedy icons. What did you think of this concept of basically someone doing your bidding, almost having like your own little Terminator?
I loved it.
Yeah?
I thought this was super, super cool. This was a creepy, weird concept and very Blacklister-ish-esque, whatever thing you want to add to the end of that. And I was completely on the edge of my seat the entire time, because the one thing I was trying to figure out was, how does the person become the Cyranoid or the stand-in, and when do they become themselves? Because you can't figure out like when the controller is talking and when the human is talking. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, is there like an override, and does it attach into the brain somehow? But like, when can you talk and when can she talk? Or is the person just afraid to talk because the contract, you know, is there some kind of like self-destruct device inside of it? So there's more about this tech that I'm completely enamored by and interested in and want to go read up on now over the weekend.
Okay, well, get ready, because I'm going to play the devil's advocate. That's a Pacino reference. So what I'm going to say is I partially like this idea. I think the idea itself is very clever and very intriguing, and I dig the tech of it. My issue is we're all coming up to mid-season. Liz Keen has been gone for five now. I mean, technically.
Five, six, Megan seven, Boone, the actress, eight, has been nine. Gone. Five episodes.
Okay, so five episodes. And I feel like she's been the focal point of almost all of them.
All but one, yes.
Yes, all but one. And this is another way to keep her involved in the show without actually being in the show. Because, look, we don't know what the reasons are. It's obvious the actress is not available for whatever. They're not shooting Megan for whatever reason. Whatever. She hasn't left the show. She'll be back. I know that. But what I'm saying is, then don't have Keen be the focal point of the episodes. Because that is just, it completely pulls me out of the show doing this. This, all I kept thinking was, it's kind of like when you watch a show where you have an actor that passed away early, you know, or something, and they just shoot behind shots or side shots just so you get the feel of who the character is supposed to be rather than the actual character. And it takes you out of it because you're just thinking about it. Where if it wasn't the focal point, I wouldn't be thinking about it. And that's, do little teasers, do digital trails, emails, phone calls through other people, you know, but doing this is almost like, look, we're going to have Keen in the episode, but she's not really in the episode, but she's still in the episode. And it just does not work for me at all. All I did was think that this was a distraction from the episode for me.
But see,
you understand what I'm saying?
But exactly what you said happened in episode 5, 6, and 7, where there was the digital trail of Liz, her presence was felt. It worked better, but you didn't like that either.
I didn't like that either, because I just, if she's going to be gone and she's going to be making this ominous empire, she doesn't need to be the focal point of every single episode. I just feel like you can't have it both ways. My opinion, I don't think it works as well as people seem to want it to work. It is distracting more than it is involving and immersive. I don't feel like it's any problem with the plots or the characters, or the actors, or anything like that. I just feel like it's something that I understand why they're trying to do it. It makes sense to me. I just don't think it's working for me personally as well as they would like it to at least, you know, but I could definitely be alone. You know, I could definitely be alone. I'm just saying, I would, if she's going to be gone for whatever the reasons are, and you know, we won't talk about that because we don't know the answers and we're not going to speculate. We just don't do gossip here. It's just not how we do our podcast. Whatever the reasons are, if Liz isn't going to be there, then let's make her a minor portion of the story instead of the central point to 4 of 5 episodes. That's where that makes it distracting, more distracting than it needs to be.
So then I would take the counterpoint and say that I love this direction for the season because I think what we don't know is what's the end game of this whole thing, right? And having Liz be in the shadows, Liz doing the things that Reddington might have done, say for the 4 years he was disappeared from 90 to 94, or even from 94 until when he shows up on Liz's doorstep. I think that this is a real interesting twist on the concept to make us go, oh, well, she really learned from the master and she can do the things that the master can do. And she's even kind of better than the master, which I know some people will kind of cringe about, but she has FBI experience. She's got profiler experience. She now has the criminal experience. So yeah, she could maybe even one up Reddington because new technology, new game, younger school of thought, different thinking.
I have no problem with any of that. The problem, because I firmly believe that totally makes sense and it works on the character. I get it. She's got 100% access. She can do it. She can also learn how to make a concentrated blast. Yes, said it. And I don't have a problem with that aspect of it. What I'm saying is the portion that I am a actions speak louder than words guy. Through in every aspect of my life, actions speak louder than words. All I've seen in 4 out of 5 episodes is people tell me how awesome Liz Keen is because we can't see her do it. That works the opposite for me. That comes across less impressive. I see Keen doing it. Okay. I'm like when she did the bomb, I dug that. I thought that was cool. You know, she's put the whole thing up because she's in frame. You see her when you're trying to showcase different ways to hide the fact that she's not there. It takes me completely out of that scenario. And all I'm thinking, I'm just distracted and I want to be immersed. That's what I'm saying. It's distracting, not immersive for me.
Yeah. And I'm the opposite. I'm like, whether she's in the scene or she's not in the scene visually, I know that her presence is doing all of this stuff. And I think it makes it much more intriguing to be like, well, how is she pulling that off and what's she doing? And like we were talking about, like, how is she going to use Chemical Mary? Boom. Answer 2 episodes later. It was great. Loved it.
I have no problem with that. I have the problem with the way we're handling it.
Yeah.
The actual character of Liz Keen, that's what's distracting to me. It's just not working for me.
So hashtag Team Aaron, hashtag Team Troy, whose side are you on? Do you like the season story and how it's breaking down with Liz off screen? Or do you want Liz back in the show doing everything herself instead of through some patsy?
It's not about she has to be in the show. Like you can work around it. I feel like it's an easy workaround and just have blacklisters through the week and just do, you know, bookends or something like that. But to have the central plots of 4 out of 5 episodes be centered around Liz Keen and she's not there, it doesn't work as well as Berlin did because Berlin was an enigma. We know Liz Keen. We know the character. We are invested. We, you know, so like when I saw the doppelganger, there wasn't a second or moment that I thought that's Liz Keen because she doesn't move at all like Megan Boone does.
Oh, like, so, which went to the window?
There was literally, yes, her movement is not Megan Boone. I mean, I've watched her for, you know, 7 or 8 years. Maybe that is an uncomfortable thing, but I know how she walks and it's just, it wasn't her. Yeah. I knew that.
But I
painfully
mean,
and you know this because you've watched TV so much, anytime you don't see a character's face, you know, they're not in the episode.
Well, yeah, I think this was the hard part of this episode. I mean, I'm sure there are fans out there, like not the super diehards and the ones that are like picking it apart and watching it 3 times a week, you know, to get all the clues and the answers. But there are the general audience who would actually believe fans that this was Liz for most of the episode until you get the, oh, she's not Liz. What is it? What's going on? So from that person, I think sometimes we're maybe overcritical in a lot of ways because we
can my wife can see is not a super fan. She just enjoys the show. And as soon as she saw her, she's like, well, that's not Megan.
Yeah,
seriously, like 3 seconds.
But your wife talks to you. I mean.
But I don't talk to her about this. And she doesn't listen to the podcast. So I keep this pretty much to my... I let her... Because I don't want, you know, my over my over deciphering of things to affect how she enjoys the show. I just ask her if she enjoyed it, and then I'll talk to her about whatever she wants to talk about the show.
Yeah, because
that's just how we watch it.
We could clearly know from the trailer last week that it wasn't Liz.
Didn't watch the trailer.
Yeah.
I don't watch them hardly ever, man.
No. So I mean, from the trailer last week, I was like, yep, that's not Liz. And then this week, it's like, yep, no, that's not Liz. And then what I really liked about this, though, is this whole concept of the Serenoid. Because then when it wasn't Liz, I was like, well, how are they going to pull this off? And then and now you're roping me into the story and the understanding and the concepts and going through the whole, you know, is she just playing Liz? Is it like the forecaster where she's got like radio in her brain kind of thing? Like that's the part of the episode that intrigued me, was how is this all going to play out? And then you get to that really, really intense scene and you're just like, whoa, like I was on the edge of my seat for this one during that part.
That portion. Yeah. I was on the edge of my seat because I know that Red has killed innocent people, unlike some.
Right.
So I did think it was a possibility, even though it was a good thing that he didn't, because that would have been hard for me even as a fan to come back from, to be perfectly honest. I was all ready to make that argument, because if he would have killed that woman, I don't care who she killed. She was sitting there without a weapon in hand. That would make him a pretty awful person. He's already done that several times. So
would it be equal? I guess that's the dilemma now. If she would have died, is it equally Liz's fault or is it 100% Red's fault?
100% Red's fault. Just like when Kaplan got shot, wasn't Kaplan's fault. 100% Red's fault.
Yeah, but Kaplan wasn't being controlled by another person.
But Kaplan made choices that led to Red thinking he had to put her down. And he did so at his own merit. So, well,
yeah, but I agree with that. I mean, that's 100% Red's fault. Here, it's like Liz is controlling this woman and not letting her do the thing.
She's not controlling her. There's no control element. That's a mistake. She paid her to do a job. She was functioning as her avatar because she was pleading for her life subtly while she was responding. So she's not being controlled.
Then why didn't she just run away?
Because there's two guys with guns looking right at her. I mean, all she put in contact lens and a earpiece. That's all she did. She wasn't being controlled. She had free choice. She could have left and been shot. So yeah, 100% Red. Well,
that's
100%.
That's what I'm wondering if the earpiece or the eye thing had some kind of like, what do you want to call it? Cyanide, you know, if you disobey the client, then they can like override you or like trigger something and electric shock you or something, or.
I don't know. They didn't go into that. That would be some impressive tech, but I didn't see an example of it. So you can't use that as a reference. You can't say yes, that was the case. So to my mind, you can't say control.
She did it on her own. So if he shoots her, Liz would have been completely 100% clear.
Yeah, it's not her fault. How could she possibly be culpable when he shoots, if he shot her point blank with nobody else in the room, with Liz not in the room? That's murder. Doesn't really matter why. I'm going to make you mad. Boom. It's on you. No, that's just pouty what that was.
All right. I'm just curious.
There you go. All right. I guess we're done with that. We're pretty much done with this episode, guys. King.
No, because now we got to tell like what it is. What was this all for? What was the purpose of Chemical Mary and this whole Keen, Liz thing?
Keen wants to meet with Neville Townsend. That's what it's all about. To kill him? No. He hunted her mother for years and Red thinks she wants revenge. But apparently Chemical Mary is Neville's sister.
What?
Plot twist. That was clever. I didn't know that. Didn't see that coming. And Neville thinks he has Liz Keen, but like I said, doppelganger who's wired for Liz. So she tells Liz that her mother's death was faked. And this is actually a pretty bold move. I really dug this move. Would have been cool if I saw Liz Keen's face. Katerina Rostova was framed and set up as a patsy by Dom and Red. Red is N13, and that's why he killed Katerina. Keen even plays the audio for him. Now, what she wants is Keen needs Townsend's influence. She wants to be his partner, but first, he wants her to prove her loyalty. Now, that's where it gets tricky. Fake Keen surrenders herself to the post office. Because Liz Keen can hear and see everything, she helps her get in and out and navigate and whatnot and get to Chemical Mary. Because Neville's price is the death of his sister. That's messed up. What's more messed up is Liz ordered it. So how do you feel about all that?
Well, at first I was like, well, he's going to ask her to break out. And I'm like, okay, that's doable. They could probably do that. Liz can control her, do the thing. They sneak her out and blah, 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 blah. And then when it turned to be the fact that Neville wanted her dead, I was like, whoa, that's a different twist. And I was really shocked to see that Liz actually went through with it. But at the same time, shocked I was what? Like, because this is the thing. When is Liz in control? And when is the Cyranoid, the doppelganger, in control? Because you remember when she was running away from the FBI agents, and then the wrestler had her and the doppelganger in his sights. The doppelganger ends up shooting the FBI agent that comes up the stairs behind wrestler in the leg. So was that the doppelganger that chose to shoot in the leg, or was that the Liz telling the doppelganger to shoot him in the leg? So in this case, was it the doppelganger that actually killed Chemical Mary, or was it Liz that killed Chemical Mary? Because maybe the doppelganger was like, I got to kill her, whether Liz wants to or not, because I got to get the hell out of here. If you followed all that.
Yeah, the whole idea of a Cyranoid is that the thoughts come from the person and flow through the person. So basically, you're speaking for someone, you're speaking through someone else. There's not any control issue that I could decipher. Now, maybe that's possible. Maybe I'm just stupid. Hey, that is a very plausible situation. I just did not see there was any indication that that was, I just think this fake Keen was very resourceful and could kick some ass. So she was taking direction from Liz on what to do and where to go and who to shoot and, you know, high, low and da, 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 da. So she was directing the whole time, but that's it. You know, it was still that person's actions. Now, Liz would have had to order the death of Chemical Mary, and she did, because I think she might have killed Aram otherwise if she wasn't listening to Liz. So I think she was listening intently, but I don't think Liz was controlling her.
Yeah, I don't think it's a control issue. I think it's just a matter of, that's why I asked the question, like, is Liz responsible if,
yes,
if she would have died?
I answered it.
Because
answered
in this like case, is Liz responsible because Chemical Mary died?
100%. She's 100%, just like it. Red would have been 100% responsible. She is 100% responsible
how?
For Chemical Mary's
how
death.
Is that? How is that? It was the she doppelganger that her killed death. Her. Liz didn't kill her. The doppelganger
she
killed
ordered her.
Her
death. Done. It's done. This is how laws work. She ordered her death. She's culpable.
Well, technically, Neville ordered the death. Liz just carried out the order.
Liz ordered the doppelganger it because carried the order. Liz is the one talking to the doppelganger. There's really no nuance here, man. This is a court of law. Liz would be guilty, and fake Keen would be getting the deal. That's how that works. They always want the one that orders it. It's all a true story. Right. Watch some murder shows, man.
I find this fascinating. It's like a human dilemma.
It's not a dilemma. They have plenty of laws for it. If she orders it, she's a murderer. She is 100%. She's the murderer.
So if I call up,
somebody's doing the murder by proxy, but Liz Keen is the one. Now, Neville technically ordered it, so he's more guilty. So Liz could get a deal, too, to flip on him if they really want to go that route. But yep, she's the one that's directly giving the order to the doppelganger to kill Chemical Mary. Either way, Liz is culpable. 100% she's culpable.
But if I call up my friend Joey,
oh, Lord,
and Joey comes to your house and whacks
kills me,
you.
Because you're responsible.
Because I told Joey. But you have no idea that I talked to Joey.
Yeah, but that's what the cops have to prove. And we can prove it because we're watching the TV show, so we know it.
That's why I'm just curious. It's an interesting human dilemma when you think about it.
Just why, whenever husbands take a contract out to whack their wives, that's why they go to jail and the hitman gets the deal.
See, this is where you guys all understand. Like, I am willing to kill Aaron. Aaron is willing to kill his spouse. Just for the record.
That's not what I said. That is not what I said.
You said if you take it a contract to correct, I came up with an example that kills my best friend. You came up with an example that kills the wife. I'm just saying. For the record.
I was speaking of about a bazillion murder shows. I would never do that. I firmly believe divorce is easy. just go do that. There's no reason to go to crazy lengths over whatever.
I will I'll keep handing you the shovel.
I'm just letting you know that would never, ever. Nope. All right. So that happens. And then, so that's it.
That's it. Show's over.
Well, we got some character stuff. What do we get for music?
Nothing this week, actually. It was all Dave Porter on the keyboards and the synths. Really great stuff. I felt the pulse pounding action through that. So hopefully they're saving up for some big play, big budget music for the rest of the season.
I really love when Porter gets center stage. I really do.
I do. It really adds to the environment. And then, because most of the time it's like that same kind of like pounding baseline kind of stuff, you know, that ominous. Sometimes when he gets to play the other stuff where it's more light and fluffy, I kind of like that.
Well, I really dug the technical aspects of it. And it, like I said, it was just the distraction portion that bothered me. But I already talked about that. I don't need to keep going back to it. So even characters, we got Panabaker. She shows up again. We always miss her. I love the dip your wick in the fugitive end of the swimming pool. That was an interesting comment. Everybody knows that Wrestler and Liz did it. That's what we know now.
And then she talked about neutering your fair share of swamp creatures. I think just we need like a new segment of like, you know, wise sayings from Panabaker or something.
Yeah, she, I do.
She has
I
a
do
vocabulary.
Like, I like that she was advocating for she can't turn her back on this. You know, Liz has gone too far. She has.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the right, this is definitely, it was about time. Cooper needed to put the hammer down, but let's hold off on that for a second. Wrestler works in the LD pest control van. Now that seems a pretty obvious surveillance van. I mean, rooting out pests. I don't know if I'd use that one. Maybe use something a little different, but you know, I get it. You gotta work with
it. I wouldn't say it was an obvious surveillance van. I mean, it's an obvious van for something. Maybe it's drug related or
pest control. Pest.
But you know, it was definitely an obvious van that didn't belong there.
An LD law department. What? I don't know. All right. Park figures out Liz is a doppelganger. You know, that's cool. And also figures out Rakiten is playing them by uploading the data after he'd been found out. So she knows. She figures out two big points this episode.
She does.
So, yeah.
So she gets a little bit more to do. Doing like the FBI work. Everybody else is like, oh, poor Liz. We got to save
her. My feelings. Feelings. I miss her. Aram is going to go confront Chemical Mary, which I thought was, you know, an interesting way to get Aram over there. So he could have this basically debate with Liz and also see, I thought it was important for him to see how far she's gone. Because it seems like his world is really coming to start to turn on Liz, I think, at some point. Because he sees that fake Keen was ordered by real Keen
to kill
Chemical Mary. But then, even though she's a war criminal, that's not cool by Aram.
But then Liz was literally like, but Aram, she killed kids. You know, she's
and
bad.
Turbo. Remember Turbo? Come on.
I thought that was totally a random thing to pull the turtle pet to prove your, like, I would have been like, remember the last time I saw you, you were playing Flora's Lava with my daughter?
Aw.
Like that's what I would have pulled as my like way to say, hey, it's really me, not hey, it's your pet turtle.
And so I have a question, okay, at this point with those characters, especially Wrestler and Aram, at what point is it she's just manipulating her friends at this point? Like she's fully in red zone. Because this is what Red does all the time. He manipulates everybody he comes in contact with. And everybody loves him. She does it, and she's a wench. So interesting. But how do you feel about that? Has she gone too far on the front? Like, would you still consider her a friend of theirs at this point?
No, I mean, she was literally like, oh, Aram, it's me. And then whack, she knocks the gun out of her hands, out of his hands, the minute she has the upper hand on him. And then same with Wrestler. It's like, oh, Wrestler, I miss you. It's like, but I'm going to stick a gun to the back of your head and then tell Cooper I'll kill you if you come any closer to us. So I think she's crossed the line at this point.
Yeah, that was a little far.
I mean, sure. I mean the lean in, smooch, and then steal your gun so I could get away, you know, one time. That's fine. You know, it's a clever move. You know, kudos, I get you.
Yeah, it worked for me.
It's like when you have a good play on a basketball court or a football field. It's like, yeah, you know what? Good play. You bested me. All right. Do it twice. No, man. You're my enemy now.
Cooper, he had a lot to do this episode. So Liz wouldn't do anything without reason, according to Cooper. And he finds out, because he used that fingerprint from the last episode, that they're outing a traitor to the U.S. That's what she's trying to do. She's trying to out a traitor to the U.S., and N13, we find out about a little bit, or he tells the team about Rakiten, found the stolen intel, got to Reddington. Reddington is N13, but they need to find Rakiten first.
Can we just say that out loud so everybody understands once and for all that Reddington is N13?
Yeah. I think it's been said about 12 times, hasn't it?
It was literally confirmed very, very specifically in 804 at the end of the episode.
Yeah, it was. So it was, in 13.
And that was the part that Aaron listened to, because he didn't listen to the part that said, hey, and I told Rakitin.
Yeah, my bad. Rakitin is a real person. And now he's popping up everywhere. Right. I make one freaking weird proclamation, then all of a sudden Rakitin's everywhere. Just because I didn't remember the guy in one episode. But whatever. All right, so he beat Aram. Cooper did by decrypting that, and then we find out that one of these five guys is a traitor to this country. Well, Keaton's trying to throw him off, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work because Park is smarter than him, and we know, or he knows, that Cooper's the one who froze the security clearance, and so that he tried to fake Keaton's death, and that's not really going to work. Which means Cooper's back in the crosshairs. He's definitely in danger at this point, because there's been a lot of talk in the last few episodes about how Harold Cooper is a problem.
To now, the Eastern friends.
Yeah, but those are the people that matter. So at some point, there's going to be a war coming to Cooper's doorstep. You agree?
Yeah, I would think so. But depends on who would be coming to the front door, right? Because we know we have the Eastern friend. We know we have Rakitin. Are there other people in this goon squad? Or is it really just the two of them? And then we have Townsend. And because we had Heidinger, but Heidinger was part of... This is the question. Was Heidinger part of the Townsend group, or was Heidinger part of the Eastern Friend group running the Western office? So this is where...
Say that again?
Well, because remember, Katarina was coming in with the information, and she wanted to meet with Heidinger, and then Heidinger ends up getting killed right on the park bench and by Red. So Heidinger was running the Western office. Was he running the Western office for Townsend's company, or was he running the Western office for the Eastern Friend's company? Because I think Townsend and the Eastern Friend are on two different fronts, like FBI, CIA type of thing.
Interesting question. What do you think?
I mean, I think the Townsend directive is something that's completely independently separate from whatever the Sikorsky Archive Eastern Friend stuff is. And they're both connected to N13 in some way, shape, or form. But I don't think they know about each other, or if they do, I don't think they're wanting to work together.
I could buy that. Yeah, that seems right to me.
I mean, it feels like we have two cabals.
Probably five at this point.
At least three, and Red's in charge of one, in case anybody forgot.
Yeah, well, they haven't really come back to that for quite some time, but I guess we're just meant to assume his criminal empire is the cabal at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless when he went bankrupt, he couldn't fund the cabal anymore, and the cabal disbanded, divested. Well, into smaller,
they didn't
smaller cabals.
Bring that up on the show. A mini cabal?
Yeah, maybe.
Little C? All right, well, he ordered...
At that point.
Yeah, he orders an arrest warrant for Elizabeth Keene. So it's official. Elizabeth Keene is no longer an FBI agent. She is officially wanted for murder. What do you think?
I think Cooper is staying a character. I think it's the writing the character the way they should be writing the character for the show.
Yeah, it's about time.
Cooper's realizing this is it. This is the point. This is the line that you can't cross. Therefore, APB on it. Get him blue.
It was about time. So moving on to Red. I'm engaged in a 30-year project. If you jeopardize that, I'm going to put you down permanently. So 30-year project. Did that stand out to you at all? Were you like, well, what specifically is the project?
Well,
or did you just assume that had a Liz Keene reference to it because you're...
Well, I was thinking like, okay, if this is a 30-year thing and this was all premeditated from the start...
That means end game. That means there was an end game the whole time that he's working toward.
Right. From the get-go, from the jump. And so that question becomes then, if all of the theory camps that we've come to love and talk about throughout the course of the years, this either makes it sound like we're all wrong...
I hope so. I think that'd be fabulous. That
and
would make
it, and it's something we haven't even so thought joyful. Of, which sad, but would be totally awesome. That's kind of hot. What I'm hoping for. It's like, if it's not my theory, it's something nobody's thought of. That's what I'd like to see.
Of course. Cause you wouldn't want to be wrong. Like you just can't live with just being wrong. Right. Nobody in the world can handle being wrong anymore.
I'd be happy if I was wrong, as long as it's something else other
as
than
long as no one else has thought of it before, which means no one else is right. You have a serious problem with admitting that when you're wrong. It's okay, I promise you, to just admit you're wrong. It's okay.
Never,
I promise. It's
never,
not a big deal.
Never.
Like my daughter, you can never just say you're right. It's always like, well, you're not wrong. Yeah, well, 30-year project makes me feel like it's been something, it's been intentional for a specific reason, and there's an end game. That's what I get out of it.
Well, then
either scientific study of some sort or an end game of some sort. And I really hope it is something we haven't thought of. I think that would be fantastic. And I still, to this day, hope he's really someone insignificant. I think that would be fabulous. Just like I wish Star Wars would have stuck with that. I think that would have been a great ending. Not everything has to have connections to stuff we've already seen. He can 100% be a character we have not seen. I've said this for so long. He could 100% be a character. We just haven't needed to know the story yet because we haven't gotten to that point in the story yet.
And where we went back to like the first episode in the pilot and did all the...
Where he's you want it all connected
well, the theory people are like, before. You know, he's a criminal. Everything is about me is a lie. And it's like, maybe they told us the answers from the beginning. Maybe they told the answer from the beginning. Hey, must be good to be home. So maybe he was a U.S. intelligence officer from the get-go. He's just not Raymond Reddington. He's just a different guy. And that different guy was actually maybe working with Alan Fitch. And he was working with the Cabal. And he probably knew Katerina. And he was just doing everything for Diane, you know, Fowler. And then his family ends up getting killed because of it. And he's pissed off. And, you know, he could just be some random CIA plant that was maybe embedded into the Russian side of things rather than Russia implanting it into the U.S. side of things.
Maybe he was pretending to be Raymond Reddington or something. And so the whole time they thought he was somebody else. And he was really nobody.
Go back to that tape, right? The whole, you know, I want this done by Christmas. I want Reddington framed. Maybe this guy was part of the frame job. And now that it didn't go like it was supposed to go and Katerina botched the thing, Alan Fitch said, hey, inside guy, you're going to take over what Katerina was going to do because Katerina told Fitch the plan or something.
And he felt horrible about it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just guilt. Guilt makes people do all kinds of stuff. It's very possible.
Yeah. He's still not the
Maybe
OG.
That's why he always does the our country thing. Maybe it's not because he's a Russian. Maybe it's because he feels ashamed by something our country did to him.
Yeah, maybe.
Cast him aside.
He was a CIA agent that got left out in the cold, or our country killed his family, or...
We're just literally going to name every possible theory so you can say you weren't wrong. So you've got something to cling to. I like it.
But this is nice. This is new intel that could make you think of new stuff.
Sure. Well, I don't really... I've thought of everything we've already talked about at some point or another, but, you know, I'm not obsessed with not being wrong. I just want to know what it is. Don't care who's right, who's wrong. I know you're wrong. Your big thing is wrong. But everything else, I think, is pretty much open. There's a couple things I know in my heart are not correct. That's one of them.
So what I know is that poor radio that he shot. I mean, modern vintage radios. I love vacuum tubes. I love those old school.
Was it radio or TV?
That was radio.
It was radio?
Okay. Yeah. He's playing music.
I haven't seen one in a long time because, you know, it's old.
It's a vacuum tube and it's old.
Yeah. Well, that's where we hear in the repair shop. That's where we meet the commissioner, and Red basically barters to get the info on Fake Keen so that he'll let that guy go.
So they can do the trace.
Yep. Red and Liz have a chat. I would like to stop for us to find peace. Then he plays that Russian roulette where there's no bullet in the gun. It was a pretty good trick. Did you think he would do it?
I didn't see him not put the bullet in the gun. I thought the bullet was in there. And I was like, how damn lucky is she? That's 5 shots.
Yeah.
Like, and then I kind of went, oh, he didn't put the bullet in there before he showed the no bullet in there. Because I'm like, there's no way you get to 5 in Russian roulette. Never.
Well, I'm sure it's possible. Absolutely, it's possible.
The odds are there, but they are not in your favor.
They are not in your
favor.
Katniss
is not coming to save your day.
I would never get to 5. I would get to 1, and then I would just run and cry and just tell them whatever they needed to know. Honestly, I am not your spy. I would not. Honestly, you could probably pull the hammer back and be like, you know what? I do not care this much. What do you want to know? Here is Troy's social security number. Absolutely. Hack away.
But that scene was intense. It was really, really well done.
I thought it was really, really well done. It was well shot. It was very, I really dug how they cut back and forth between the camera footage. I meant it seriously. I think Andrew McCarthy's become my favorite director in the show. I just think he does the intensity very well. He shoots it very well. He's got a lot of cutaways, a lot of smart cutaways. So
especially the, like when she hangs up on her side, so she can have deniability of if Red actually pulled the trigger or not for that sixth shot.
Yep.
So good. So good. Very good.
Loved it. He tells Townsend that Keane is not to be trusted when he's talking to him, when he's talking to Red. Townsend tells him,
"You're full of shit." That's what he says.
he heard the audio and said, "Nuh-uh, it's you, brother, are going to be getting a reckoning." So what do you think that means? That he's going to be the villain for the rest of the season, the main villain, and while Liz is still on the run?
I mean, Townsend has always been an adversary for Red since season six. So I'm glad that we finally met him. I think the bigger thing that I have question on is Townsend's help, because there was something weird about the way that the episode closed up shop. It was what was her name? Blake was the lady that was giving him his meds and stuff, and she's like, "Try to get some sleep," and she's like, "I always try, but I never do." Is it because she's drugging Townsend? Is she some kind of plant? Is she,
you know, is everybody a plant in your world? Can nobody just be a person?
Well, I just, the way that was shot and the way she was all like, "Sleep tight, honey," and turned off the lights, I'm like, she's a villain. She's actually running the show.
Or his girlfriend.
Could be.
Wife.
Could be.
I mean, why would we want to underthink it, though, right? When we can overthink it.
But I mean, come on, we've all worked in the corporate world. We know that the CEO doesn't actually run the company. It's the executive assistant that runs the company. And Blake very much seems like the Townsend executive assistant.
100% certain that the executive assistant just thinks they run the company. All right. So I want to take a second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklister, Patricia. Also, a special shout out to our task force members, Judy and Sharon, Rory, Karen, Bobby, Jens, and now Mary, all official task force members. All of them. All these people receive cool gifts from us, and you can get a cool gift too if you donate at the $20 level or higher. If you want a cool t-shirt or a coffee mug, you could do that at the $20 level or higher. You don't have to do it forever either. You can just do it for a couple months and you get those gifts.
That's right. When you drop down from 20 levels, we still want you to keep yourself at the $5 level though, because the $5 people get all of the podcast episodes first before anybody else, as well as any special interviews and other things that we may do. And you can do all of that by going over to P-A-T-R-E-O-N. That's patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Fill the fedora, get some cool rewards for yourself, and we'll be back with Special Agent Intel right after this.
Do you love video games but are tired of all the negativity surrounding the industry? Check out The Gaming Outsider, a podcast about video games by those who still love to play them. We strive to involve our community and even invite listeners as special guests to join in discussions such as what new games we've been playing, gaming news, and our weekly From the Outside In topic. The Gaming Outsider may not be industry insiders, but we take an outsider's look at our favorite hobby. And remember, there's no such thing as a bad game, just ones that aren't for you.
Hi, it's Megan Boone, and you're listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
All right, Special Agent Intel, Julioda on Reddit. I honestly can't help but notice that this season has been getting much more positive feedback and approval from this diehard fan base. And with all of these thankful cries that the show isn't shitting the bed in its final season, I can't help but notice, are we all enjoying the show a little more because Keen isn't on the screen being a total idiot or crybaby? Don't get me wrong, Megan Boone is a great actor, and she shows a lot of range with Elizabeth, but the writers have messed with her character so much that she's been gone for like 3 episodes, and we're all thankful for it. Julioda, don't say all. I'm not thankful for it. I think I just went through that. What do you think about what this person says?
Well, we haven't not disagreed with this kind of line of thinking, where sometimes the Liz Keene character, I think, has had some writing challenges for
she was back and forth.
Flip-flopping.
Yeah, I think it's fit a lot of what has been on the screen, but, you know, we've had that debate.
Yeah, we've had that debate, right? Megan, it's not Megan's fault. She's working with what she's given, you know, and the character hasn't really been, you know, as front and center as Raymond, as James Spader's character. And I think that it suffers at times, for sure. I think that there's times where we're like Ruin or some of the stuff she did in season 6. And it's like, man, when Liz is a badass, she's a badass. Put Tom Keene in a boat, chain him up to a wall. Freaking amazing stuff.
I right? still wish he was still chained up to that wall. Dead. But chained to the wall.
But I think from that regard, are we enjoying the season more because... So this is the question, right? Because Liz has been on the show this entire time, according to Aaron. Liz is always present, always been part of the storyline, except for one episode this season. So what you're saying is that are you happy Megan Boone's not on the show because Liz has been on the show? Liz has been a central character in all of these episodes but one. And I don't think that's the case. Like, I miss Megan. I think Megan's great on the show. Like, I'd love to see Megan back doing her thing. I want to see her back being a badass is what I want to see. I don't want to see her being the, oh, Red, I love you this week.
I don't think people like any time anyone is against Red. And Liz is the character that most predominantly is going to be against Red because that's whose life is constantly being toyed with. For whatever reason, Red is the, you know, a lot of times I remember when Breaking Bad was on and people, even though Walter White was one of the most horrible characters on TV, there were people that were 100% just side with Walter and they would hate Jesse because he'd be screwing something up for Walter. You know, there were those people. And I think to a degree there is some of that, except Red is way more likable than Walter White by a mile. You know, I mean, it's just a combination of how it's written and how it's portrayed. And so people are just, they don't like the going against Red aspect. And that's what Liz, the character, has always had to do because that's, she's the one whose life is turned upside down by this guy. And I think that's where a lot of that comes from. Now, I don't think Liz has been out of the show. I would honestly be happy if Megan's not going to be in the show for a certain period of time for whatever reason. I would prefer that she wasn't a predominant part of every episode because, like I said, it distracts the hell out of me. I don't agree with this. Everybody's enjoying the show more. I don't find this very enjoyable. It's becoming very distracting for me and frustrating as a fan. So I don't agree with that. I mean, I've still enjoyed many of the episodes this season. It doesn't mean that either. I'm just saying, I don't think you can ever say all. I just never think that's fair. I mean, people on the internet is not all. That's just the most vocal. And sure, there's a lot of vocal support for Liz and vocal rallies against Liz. I mean, it's whatever side you're on, you think you see more of, most likely.
What I could tell you is that I am thoroughly enjoying season 8 way more than I enjoyed season 7. And I don't think it's because of Liz. I think it's because season 7 was like, oh, we got another season and we're trying to bridge it to the next season. And we got to just add some stuff here for 22 weeks. And then it got cut by 3 in order to make what we need to do to get to the next thing. Like seasons, I felt like we started season 7 in a spot and we ended season 7 in a spot. And the only thing we did was go, okay, Liz is pissed off at Red at the end of season 6, and she's still pissed off at Red at the end of season 7, but now she's actually going to do something about it, which is really where she was at the end of season 5. So
I think 7 was a very frustrating point for many fans because once again, you have a character that's supposed to be a very prominent character in the show, and you don't even get real confirmation that she is or isn't that character. And that is frustrating on a show that's kind of done that push and pull for a long time.
But I could also say that in season 7, I had a real problem with the Liz character because like you're a profiler. You're just like, you're so gullible with this nanny coming into your house and hanging out with your kid. Oh yeah. Totally. Watch Agnes. Like you protected Agnes. Like, I don't know, like your pair of socks. I mean, it's like, you're never going to lose them, right? They're on your feet the whole time. And then all of a sudden this random person shows up and you're like, oh yeah, totally watch my kid. It's fine. You know, I think that was the problem with 7 was that I felt Liz was very gullible in 7. I think this Liz is very much the Liz from season 5 where she's the badass and wants the answers in the start of season 6 when she wants the answers. You know, as long as she doesn't flip back to the I love you moment and go back to like, oh, Red's great. and I know who you are, and I totally want to be with you and, you know, hang out and do crime battles, you know, father-daughter style or whatever. You know, I think then it's great. Like, she has to stay mad at Red, and this has to come to a head at one point.
I really enjoyed the first four episodes. I preferred those four to the last five. So I would disagree with what you're saying here, because I...
Me or the caller, writer?
Caller. Well, yeah. Because I firmly believe I really dug what Liz was doing. I thought it was really fun and interesting, and I would have liked to have seen that happen more. And by having the character still predominantly being part of every episode, yet we don't really see her, it's just not working for me. If it was like Berlin and it's a character we didn't know and it was more of an enigma or a mysterious force, then I think it would work great. It doesn't work when it's a character you've seen every week for 7 years. It just, for me personally, it's very distracting.
Because we're intense that the Russian roulette scene was, you want that kind of like back and forth between Red and Liz to be Megan Boone staring genuine. James Spader in the face.
I wanted to be genuine.
Yeah. I get it. Yep. Cool. Well, speaking of theories.
We got a theory here.
Anja4799 on Reddit said, this is why making theory camps are dangerous to begin with, because it's so interesting to read all the different theories and ideas that fans come up with. But I think it's the worst thing you can do, because most of them will probably never come true. What does that mean? It means the writers can give us the most creative storylines and answers. The fans are still going to be mad because their idea was wrong, or they even think theirs was better. We are at a point where I think it's impossible to have a series finale that everybody likes. I'm sure it's not the writer's fault, but only the fans, because no storyline in this world can please all of those expectations. So keep that in mind while judging new episodes, and try to have low expectations, because then it's easier to be surprised and enjoy the story.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be really bummed when this. I can almost promise you that one. You're going to be bummed. You are.
Like the people that had expectations about a certain show with an island, where if you just enjoyed the ride, you enjoyed the finale very much.
I enjoyed the character ending. Didn't enjoy the island ending, because they kept acting when they could. They kept writing themselves into a hole. They couldn't address that they had written themselves into a hole. And then they made some really dumb creative choices the last season.
But see, Liz, that's the point. Liz is the island. Liz is the MacGuffin. It doesn't matter.
Wasn't a MacGuffin, man. They made it a point every episode. Amolium says, North by Northwest connection. Spoilers. I know it has been discussed that JB, the Jen Bokenkamp, loves the movie North by Northwest, and it's clearly no coincidence that Red wants to take Anne to see this movie. I also know others have discussed some similarities to the movie in the past, but I couldn't find a post specifically about the movie. There are lots of potential parallels and connections between The Blacklist and North by Northwest. Spoilers for North by Northwest. Okay, so here I just want to interject. I assume most people knew that. Otherwise, I would have went a little bit more in depth on that last season, because John's talked about it on the podcast before, right?
I believe he has, yeah.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he has. But here you go. Here's some connections. The names Kaplan and Townsend figure prominently. Yep, they're both. Kaplan is basically the fake name that's used in the movie. There is a key scene at the UN building. There's a man framed for murder. There's an attempted murder that fails. There's a fake murder that is discovered. There's a stolen microfiche and a statue. There's a great imposter twist. We have a man mistakenly identified who ends up playing the role of another person who does not exist. This was a persona covered to cover for a female government agent. There is a government agency chief who knows the truth. I confess I have not watched the movie in some time and refreshed my memory with the Wikipedia page. Yeah, that's pretty much mostly accurate. I think the movie figuring prominently in episode 8-8 is a big clue. Perhaps a rewatch of North by Northwest is in order, possibly even invited by the writers with the large marquee. I would love to hear others' thoughts on this. I love North by Northwest. I don't love it like I do other Hitchcock movies, so I don't have it memorized like I do those, like Rear Window, Rope. I could cite verbatim, Strangers on a Train, Psycho, The Birds. I can keep going. But yeah, pretty much all that is accurate. Those names are part of it, and he's talked about that connection before. But yep. It was nice that it was very pointed in that episode.
I only focused on one bullet in there.
Of course you didn't. And that's not the connection you think it is. So you're wrong.
An imposter twist that covered a persona for a female.
Yeah, you're getting it wrong. What you think is not what it is. Yeah, but it's Cary Grant is wonderful. There is a scene where this crop duster keeps chasing him around a road back and forth that, you know, is very iconic and people love that scene. But every time I watch it, I kind of laugh because I'm just like, just all you got to do is just, you know, move.
Land on top of him.
I really feel like it'd be easy to avoid a crop dusting plane. I just feel like it would be. But it's a beautiful, cinematically, it's beautiful shots and whatnot, but it's just like, just move. That's all you got to do. It's kind of funny because he goes back and forth. That's a long story. But yeah, and they tackle Mount Rushmore. And there's a lot of history behind the movie. If you've never seen it, it's a classic. I don't know. I think you should watch almost every Alfred Hitchcock movie, personally.
All right. Well, good.
Have you ever seen it?
North by Northwest?
Yeah.
I am sure I have at some point in my long storied life.
Don't you think just by that you should watch it?
Oh, yeah. I definitely will put it on a list for sure to actually spend some time to rewatch it and dissect it now. Like, I know I've seen The Birds, but I couldn't tell you anything about The Birds other than
Tell you about it. Tippi Hedren is a woman who stalks this dude, just stalks him, straight up stalks him. Everybody's like, she's a delightful, wonderful lady. No, she's crazy because she goes and hunts this man down. It's not healthy. But then again, if I was him and Tippi Hedren showed up, I'd be okay with it. I should be like, oh, she's a little crazy. I don't know why you're doing, what are you doing up in my mom's house in the middle of nowhere with some freaking birds? It's just weird. I'm a little scared. I saw this movie. I will not be ignored, will I?
All right. Well, so, if you have any thoughts or theories that you'd like to share with us here on the podcast, you can go ahead and do that over on our website, theblacklistexposed.com. Fill out the form and it'll get over to us. Or you can just drop it on Facebook or Twitter at your leisure. That would be great. Love to hear from you.
All right. That'll conclude the discussion. So now is the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, or your neighbor. And when you do, please also recommend they listen and subscribe to us, as you just heard, at theblacklistexposed.com.
And for more great Aaron and Troy hijinks, follow us on your favorite social media outlet. Over on the Twitters, I'm at Troy Heinrichs. He is at Aaron Smirks. Together we are at The Blacklist GSM. Talk about the show, the podcast, or whatever you want to talk about as we move into the end game of the mid-season here on The Blacklist.
Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. What is that 30-year project we're talking about?
It's raising a kid.
At 30, you're just done? Boom! That's fantastic.
When they're 30, you're done, because that's where your kid is currently at.
I didn't know there was an end game, but I like it. Talk to you guys later.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
This play has actually been translated many times and is responsible for...
Translated?
Translated. Translated.
What just happened?